An attractive brunette is performing a belly dance. She's wearing a gold bikini top decorated with coins, a flowing red skirt made of thin strips of glittering raffia, and a matching headdress. Her toned stomach undulates to the music. She's performing in a dimly lit underground cafe. Arabian-style rugs lay across the floor and hang on the walls. Among the audience are some of the Enterprise crew, sprawled across large cushions as they're pampered by beautiful women. Kirk, McCoy and Scotty sit at a table near the dance floor, watching as the dancer twirls to the beat of the music. She kneels, arching her back till her head touches the floor.
Captain, I think I'm gonna like Argelius.
Obviously a man of good taste.
Do you mean to tell me that all these women... Well, that all this is...
Yes, yes, yes. The Argelians think very highly of their pleasure.
Well, now, that's an understatement if I ever heard one. This is a completely hedonistic society.
The dancer gyrates her hips. Her flowing red skirt swings around her as she spins. Scotty smiles up at her.
You like her, Scotty?
Aye. Why shouldn't I?
Good. I've invited her to join us at the table. I thought you might like to meet her.
Now, that's what I call a real captain. Always thinking of his men.
They watch, transfixed, as she dances towards their table and slowly leans into a back bend. At a nearby table, a young, dark-haired Argelian man also watches her intently, a scowl on his face. Scotty beams as the dancer wiggles her hips, causing a red jewel in her belly button to glint in the light. She dances her way back to the low stage where the musicians are playing. McCoy's eyes twinkle with admiration. The dancer finishes with a flourish, her arms raised high. Customers flash the lights on their table. Scotty applauds.
Scotty, in Argelia they use the lights.
Now no one has to tell an old Aberdeen pub crawler how to applaud, Captain.
They stand as the dancer comes over to join them.
Have one of our pillows?
The dark-haired Argelian finishes his drink and leaves. A mustachioed musician follows him out.
It is a fine foggy night tonight, and I doubt if anyone has ever told you of the marvelous fogs we have in Aberdeen.
Never a word, but I'm dying to learn.
Well, then why don't I show you? There's nothing like a walk in the fog with a bonny lass.
Or a handsome gentleman. Why don't we?
They all stand as Scotty helps her up.
You don't mind, do you? I might even get back to the ship on time.
We won't leave without you, Scotty. Relax and enjoy yourself.
Scotty escorts her out.
My work is never done.
My work, Jim. This is prescription stuff. Don't forget, the explosion that threw Scotty against the bulkhead was caused by a woman.
Physically, he's all right. Am I right in assuming that?
Oh, yes, yes. And matter of fact, considerable psychological damage could have been caused. For example, his total resentment toward women.
He seems to be overcoming his resentment.
Of course, in my professional opinion, when he gets back to the ship, he's going to hate you for making him leave Argelius. But then he will have lost total resentment toward women.
Mission accomplished, as far as Scotty is concerned. Bones, I know a little place across town where the women...
Oh, yes, I know the place. I know the place. Let's go.
Weaving their way past other male Enterprise crew members who are being lavished with attention from the beautiful women of Argelius II, they step outside. The street is shrouded in thick, white fog. Pausing for a moment, they try to get their bearings. They both run in the direction of the screen. In a side street, a woman's body lies under the dense fog. McCoy checks her pulse.
She's dead, Jim.
Stabbed. 12 times.
Kirk looks up to see Scotty holding a knife, his back pushed up against the wall as he stares in horror at the body.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the starship Enterprise. Its five-year mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Star Trek, created by Gene Roddenberry, starring William Shatner. Also starring Leonard Nimoy as Mr. Spock and DeForest Kelly as Dr. McCoy. Wolf in the Fold, written by Robert Bloch and directed by Joseph Pevney.
Captain's log, stardate 3614.9, planet Argelius 2. While on therapeutic shore leave, Mr. Scott has fallen under suspicion of having brutally murdered an Argelian woman. The chief city administrator, a Mr. Hengist, has taken charge of the investigation but has learned little of value.
I don't know what to say, gentlemen. Argelius is the last planet in the galaxy. I'd expect a thing like this to happen.
We're just as shocked as you are, Mr. Hengist.
This is my home planet, Rigel 4. I'd have a dozen investigators working on the matter. But they don't exist here.
You're not a native of Argelius, sir?
Oh, no. Argelius hires its administrative officers from other planets. The Argelians aren't very efficient, you know. Gentle, harmless people. Mr. Scott? Now, are you sure you've never seen this before?
I don't remember.
Really, sir, that is hardly helpful.
Scotty, you left the cafe with the girl. Do you remember that? What happened next?
We were walking in the fog. I was up ahead trying to lead the way. I heard the girl scream. I remember starting to turn. I don't remember another thing.
Scotty, you've got to remember. Jim.
McCoy takes Kirk aside.
If he says he can't remember, he probably doesn't. You know, Scotty.
I know that a murder has been committed.
But you don't think by any chance that Scotty...
It doesn't make any difference what I think.
But you don't just throw him to the wolves.
Bones, I have a diplomatic responsibility. This happened under Argelian jurisdiction. If they want to arrest him, try him, even convict him, I have to go along with it.
But he's suffering from a severe concussion.
We'll do what we can.
It's not promising, Captain. Mr. Scott insists he remembers nothing. But my detector readings indicate that only his fingerprints are in the murder weapon.
Yes, Mr. Hengist, there were other people in the cafe about the time of the murder. Several of them left just before Mr. Scott and the girl did.
So I've been informed by the staff. They're being located, and we will question them. But the outlook for your friend is quite grim.
What is the law in these cases?
The law of Argelius is love.
A distinguished-looking man with white hair, a neat gray beard, and long, dark robes comes in.
Gentlemen, our prefect, Jarrus. Sir, Captain Kirk, Dr. McCoy.
And this is my wife, Sebo.
And this man is Scott, the one I sent you the message about?
He does not look like a man capable of such an act. Still, it's been so long. Gentlemen, before our great awakening 200 years ago, we had ways of learning the truth in such matters. We shall return to them.
The Argelian empathic contact?
You know of this?
Yes, we've heard of it. I assumed it was a lost art.
My wife is a descendant of the ancient priestesses of our land. She has the ancestral gift. Gentlemen, I have come to invite you to my home.
Prefect, don't you think this should be handled in an official manner through my office?
It shall be handled in an official manner, Mr. Hengist, since I am the highest official. Gentlemen, let us proceed to my home, where, with the aid of my wife, we shall learn the truth. If you please.
Jarrus leads his wife out of the cafe. Sebo wears her dark hair in a large bun. Her long red cloak trails behind her as she goes. Later, at their home...
Depending on your wife's empathic ability is all very well, Prefect, but there's only one way we can find out what it is Mr. Scott cannot remember.
since you find it impossible to let us go back up to our ship, I can beam down a technician with a psycho-tricorder.
Prefect, it will give us a detailed account of everything that's happened to Mr. Scott in the last 24 hours.
Oh, I'd advise against it, Prefect. This is purely an Argelian matter.
My wife must meditate for a time before she is ready. I see no reason why we should not use that time to good advantage. Very well, Captain.
Kirk Enterprise.
Spock is in the command chair.
Enterprise, Spock here.
Mr. Spock, beam down a technician with a psycho tricorder. Please use these coordinates.
Acknowledged. Coordinates received.
Kirk out.
Prefect, the psycho tricorder will require privacy in order to be effective.
There is a small chamber below this room. Perhaps that will suffice. Captain, news of this frightful murder spreading among my people. They're greatly disturbed. I have already heard talk of closing Argelius to space vehicles.
Well, that would be most unfortunate. Argelian hospitality is well known, as well as its strategic importance as a spaceport.
Yes, I believe it's the only one in the quadrant. Captain?
There are other people we should question. Perhaps I should go expedite their arrival here?
Yes, please do so, Mr. Hengist. Anyone with any connection with this murder should be present at the ceremony.
Hengist starts to leave, then stops as a pretty blonde medical technician materializes. Hengist greets her with a nod, and then leaves.
Lieutenant Karen Tracy, reporting as ordered, Captain.
Lieutenant, I want a 24-hour regressive memory check made on Mr. Scott.
Yes, Captain. Where shall I set up?
If you will just follow me, Lieutenant.
Scotty, cooperate completely with Lieutenant Tracy. Maybe we can clear this thing up.
I certainly hope so, sir. I can't stand this not knowing.
He walks over to Jarris and Lieutenant Tracy, who are waiting for him. They leave the room.
Captain. Under normal conditions, Scotty would have never done such a thing.
But that blow on the head, it could put all his previous behavior patterns into the junk heap.
Of course, there's another possibility.
Explain.
Hysterical amnesia. When a man feels guilty about something, something too terrible to remember, he blots it out of his conscious memory.
Jarris joins them, greeting Sebo as she comes in through one of the horseshoe-arched doorways.
Are you ready, Sebo?
I am ready. May I have the knife, please?
Certainly. Among other gifts, Sebo has the ability to receive impressions from inanimate objects. Do you have it, Captain?
The knife? No.
But I put it here when we arrived. It's gone.
Jarris rushes out with Kirk and McCoy on his heels. In the lower room, Lieutenant Tracy is lying on the floor. Scotty is slumped in a corner.
Scotty.
She's dead, John. Just like the other one.
Stabbed. Over and over again.
This. An Argelian stimulant, Doctor. Quite effective and quite harmless.
Go ahead, Scotty.
McCoy watches closely as Scotty drinks the stimulant.
Lieutenant. Captain. Where's...
Lieutenant Tracy is dead, Scott. You were found alone in the room.
Dead? But...
What happened down there?
I was sitting there. She was taking the readings. And now I'm sitting here.
Is that all that happened?
I tell you, I don't remember. I must have passed out.
It could be, Jim, that head injury.
No.
Kirk slowly approaches Scotty.
That head injury. Think, Scotty.
Captain, I've been trying. I can't even believe this is really happening.
There's no way into that place from up here.
Prefect, is there another entrance to that chamber?
Yes, there's a door that leads into the garden, but that's been locked for years.
Locks can be picked, Jim.
Check it.
McCoy leaves. Hengist strides into the room, followed by two men.
Prefect, both of these men were at the cafe the night of the murder.
Where have they been during the past few minutes?
Captain, if you don't mind, please.
There's been another murder, Hengist. One of my crew.
The same as Kata. Oh,
why, that's terrible. I mean, you. My men picked you up near here. What were you doing?
Please, I know nothing about it. I didn't kill anyone.
Well, how was the girl killed?
Stabbed. And there's no sign of the weapon.
If only I had facility.
You! You were a musician at the cafe. You played for the murdered girl.
Since she was a little girl, she danced for me. She was my daughter. Prefect, how could a thing like this have happened here? The man who did it must be found. He must be punished.
Kirk eyes the young, dark-haired Argelian.
And you? You left the cafe before Scott and Kara.
Is this true? Who are you?
Morla of Cantaba Street, Prefect. I was there. I have nothing to hide. Did you know Kara?
Of course he knew her. They were to be married. But he behaved disgraceful. Unheard of. He was jealous of her.
That is very disquieting.
I know it was wrong, Prefect. But I just couldn't help myself. I loved her. And when she went over to the table with these men, I just could not stand to watch, so I left. I went home.
Jealousy has often been a motive for murder.
Yes, I know. That is why the emotion is so strongly disapproved of here.
Prefect, I didn't kill anyone. I couldn't.
We shall see, Morla.
Sorry, Jim. The lock may or may not have been picked. Be hard to tell, even with the tricorder.
Kirk turns to Morla.
Can you prove you went directly home?
Captain, may I continue with the questions, please?
Well, get on with it, man. Just don't stand there.
Captain, you are behaving very much like a man who is desperately trying anything to save his friend. Would you be as desperate to save Argelius as a spaceport for your Starfleet?
Well, of course I'm trying to save my friend. If he's innocent, and he hasn't been proven guilty.
Need I remind you of the circumstances, Captain? In both cases, your friend Scott was discovered over the body, and later claimed to remember nothing.
I am ready, Jarvis.
Gentlemen, sit down, please.
On one condition, Prefect. That the room be sealed so that no one can leave or enter while the ceremony is going on.
Jarvis flicks switches which close off the archways leading into the room.
The room is sealed.
Captain, do you mean my neck is going to have to depend on some spooky mumbo-jumbo?
Kirk here.
Spock here, Captain. May I have a word with you?
Yeah. Excuse me, gentlemen.
He goes to the far side of the pillared room.
Yes, Mr. Spock.
Concerning the situation you related to us, in my opinion, the Argelian empathic contact is an interesting phenomenon. But the technique is not sound enough to risk a man's life.
What do you suggest, Mr. Spock?
Simply that we beam Mr. Scott on board the Enterprise and employ our computers to learn the truth.
These are a proud people. They have their own customs, their own laws. And while we're here, we're subject to them. It is absolutely imperative that this matter be resolved according to Argelian law. Is that clear?
Quite clear, Captain.
I don't like it any more than you do, Spock. But there's nothing we can do about it. Kirk out.
Flames burn on a small brazier. They sit, holding hands.
Let us begin. Let the circle not be broken. Concentrate upon the flame which burns upon the altar of truth. Yes. There is something here. Something terrible. I feel its presence. Fear, anger, hatred. Anger feeds the flame. Oh, there is evil here. Monstrous, terrible evil. Consuming hunger. Hatred of all that lives.
hatred of women, a hunger that never dies. It is strong, overpowering, an ancient terror. It has a name, Varadis Kessler, Rejek, devouring all life, all light, a hunger that will never die. Rejek! Rejek!
The room is plunged into darkness. When the lights come on, Scotty is holding Seba. She slumps forward, a knife in her back. McCoy looks down at the dead body and then up at Scotty, whose hands are covered in blood. Scotty stares at the blood too and looks helplessly over at Kirk. Later, Hengist comforts Jarrus as McCoy and Kirk interrogate Scotty.
Three murders. And Scotty, the only possible answer each time.
Well, I don't care what the circumstances indicate, Jim. Scotty simply could not have done it.
Normally, no. But that blow on his head could...
No, Captain.
Scotty, I'm sorry. You don't even remember whether you did it or not.
I agree with you, Captain. I'm perfectly satisfied Mr. Scott is guilty.
But not responsible.
That is unproven, sir.
We can prove it, if he's insane.
Gentlemen, please. How could any man do such monstrous things?
That's what we hope to find out, sir.
Mr. Scott.
Sir, I swear to you, I did not kill your wife or the other ladies.
By your own admission, you don't know whether you did or didn't. Your so-called failing memory.
Mr. Hengist, on the Enterprise, we can make a recording of the registrations of Mr. Scott's conscious and subconscious mind. And they will tell us what happened to him in the recent past.
There would be no room for doubt. We would know. And after all, that's what we're after, isn't it, Prefect? To know.
You, sir, claim to remember nothing about the murders.
Aye.
If this is so, you may have killed without knowing it. Will your machines tell us this?
No doubt will remain.
Very well. We will go to your ship. And he who is guilty will face the ancient penalties, barbaric and horrible though they may be. The ancient penalty for murder was death by slow torture. That law has never been changed. Do you understand that, Mr. Scott?
I understand.
Captain's log, stardate 3615.4. With Mr. Scott in a technical state of arrest, we have beamed aboard the Enterprise to continue the investigation. Each testifier will sit here, place his hand on this plate. Any deviation from the factual truth will be immediately detected and relayed to this computer, which will in turn notify us. Dr. McCoy has already fed the computer his medical reports. Our laboratory experts are examining the murder weapon and will give their data to the computers for analysis. Shall we begin? Mr. Scott, will you take the stand?
Scotty places a small yellow data file into the computer, then sits in the chair and places his right hand on the metal plate.
Computer, identify verification.
Working. Lieutenant Commander Montgomery Scott. Serial number SE-197540. Verified.
Subject's present physical condition.
Working. Subject recently received severe blow on skull. Damaged healing, some peripheral abnormalities.
Sufficient abnormalities to account for periods of functional amnesia.
Working. Negative.
Captain, I don't see how that can be.
Unless Scotty's lying about his loss of memory.
I'm not lying, Captain. I don't remember a thing about the first two murders.
Computer, accuracy scan.
Subject relaying accurate account. No physiological changes.
Captain, I didn't black out when Mr. Jarrus' wife was killed.
All right, Scotty. Let's have it.
We were holding hands. When the lights went out, the circle was broken. I heard the poor lady scream, and I was near the head of the table anyway. I went toward her, but there was something in my way.
Something? You mean someone?
No, Captain. Some thing. Cold it was, like a stinking draft out of a slaughterhouse, but it wasn't really there. Like a... if you know what I mean.
Computer.
Subject relaying accurate account. No physiological changes.
All right. Let's hit it on the head. Scotty, did you kill Sebo?
No, Captain. That I'm sure of.
He's been saying that right along. It means no more now than it did before.
Scotty, lie to me. How old are you?
22, sir.
Inaccurate. Inaccurate. Data in error.
After the lights went out, Mr. Scott, who was holding your hand?
Mola on the one side and you on the other, sir.
But that doesn't mean anything, Captain. With a room that small, the lights were out. Anyone would have had time to kill the lady.
But I remind you, we found Mr. Scott holding her in his arms. The knife... I'm sorry, sir, but I must. The knife still in her back and blood on his hands.
The verifier showed that he was telling the truth when he said he didn't kill her.
There were two other women murdered.
Mr. Scott. Did you kill Tara?
I don't remember.
Did you kill Lieutenant Tracy?
I don't remember.
Computer, accuracy scan.
Subject relaying accurate account. No physiological changes.
All that proves is that he's telling the truth when he says he doesn't remember.
This is a waste of time.
After we take the testimony here, we'll run a psychotricorder analysis of Mr. Scott's memory, which is what we wanted to do on the surface. That will give us a complete record. Will that satisfy you, Mr. Hengist?
Well, if you can convince me that the machine is incapable of error, and if it shows he did not kill the women.
There will be no error. As for the rest of it, the readings will show. I think you can step down now, Mr. Scott, if there are no objections.
I object to the entire procedure.
Mr. Hengist, we are here on my authority. We will cooperate.
Prefect, I know you mean well, but I've had experience
with
this...
For the time being, we will accept Captain Kirk's explanation of the machine's accuracy as factual. I do, however, reserve to myself the right to make the final determination.
We can ask no more. Mr. Morlow, will you take the stand?
Retrieving his yellow data file, Scotty sits with the others. Morlow, the dark-haired young Argelian, puts a blue data file into the computer, sits in the chair, head bowed, and puts his hand on the metal plate.
Where were you at the time that Kara was murdered?
I'm not sure. Walking home, I assume I was angry.
Anger is a relative state, sir. Were you angry enough to do violence?
I've never done violence in my life. I don't think that I could.
You've got to believe me. I wouldn't kill her. I couldn't. I loved her. And she loved me.
That's not true. He might think she loved him, but she didn't. She told me he was jealous. All the time, they fought constantly.
Did you kill Lieutenant Tracy?
No.
Did you kill Sebo?
No.
Computer verification scan.
Subject relaying accurate account. No some statement subjective. No physiological changes.
All right, Mr. Morlow, I think you can step down now.
Morlow removes his file from the computer and sits beside Kara's father, Tark. Kirk switches the computer off.
Sebo spoke of a hunger that never died, something that thrives on fear, terror, death. Mr. Spock, maybe we're going about it the wrong way. Let's assume that Sebo was a sensitive, that she did sense something, something evil.
Sensitivity of certain Argelian women is a documented fact, Captain.
My poor Sebo's talent was genuine, gentlemen. What she told you was true.
All right, then. What was it she said exactly? Monstrous evil, ancient terror?
That devours all life and light.
She said something else, words that didn't make any sense.
Yes. Regic, Baratus, and, Kaslak.
Obscure, meaningless words.
To us, perhaps. But to the computer.
Ah, Mr. Spock, check them out.
Computer, linguistic bank. Definition of following word. Regic.
Working. Negative finding.
There is no such word in the linguistics bank.
Affirmative.
Scan all other banks.
Working. Affirmative. A proper name.
Define.
Red Jack. Source. Earth. 19th century. Language. English. Nickname for mass murderer of women. Other Earth synonym. Jack the Ripper.
Kirk's eyes flash with disbelief. He sits, lost in thought.
Jack the Ripper.
Well, that's ridiculous. He lived hundreds of years ago.
A man couldn't survive all these centuries.
Just before she died, my wife said, "It is a hunger that never dies."
But all men die.
Yes, all men die, and Jack the Ripper couldn't be alive if he were a man. But everything we've uncovered points to Jack the Ripper, which is an impossibility, isn't it? Or is it?
Humans and humanoids make up only a small percentage of the life forms we know of. There are entities possessed of extremely long lifespans, virtually immortal.
We know that someone or something killed three women. If it's impossible for it to be human, it has to be something else, something driven to kill.
But Sibo said that it feeds on death.
In the strict scientific sense, Doctor, we all feed on death, even vegetarians.
Yes, but it said more than that, not just death, but fear. It said it also feeds on fear.
Which would tend to support the proposition that the murderer was not human. Deriving sustenance from emotion is not unknown in the galaxy, and fear is among the strongest and most violent of the emotions.
Surely, Prefect, this has gone far enough. Some man has killed three women. We have the prime suspect in our hands. Are we going to let him go and start chasing ghosts?
No, Mr. Hames, not ghosts. Possibly not human, but not ghosts. Mr. Spock, check out the possibilities.
Computer, digest log recordings for past 5 solar minutes. Correlate hypotheses. Compare with life forms register. Question. Could such an entity within discussed limits exist in this galaxy?
The Drella of Alpha Carina 5 derived nourishment from the emotion of love. There is sufficient precedence for existence of creature, nature unknown, which could exist on emotion of fear.
Computer, extrapolate most likely composition of such entity.
Working to meet with specified requirements. Entity would exist without form in conventional sense. Most probable, mass of energy, a highly cohesive electromagnetic field.
Computer, could the described entity assume physical form?
Affirmative, precedent. Miletus, cloud creature of Alpha Majoris 1.
Fairy tales, ghosts and goblins.
No. I've seen the Miletus myself. In its natural state, it's gaseous. When it's at rest, it's solid. Mr. Spock, let's assume the existence of this creature.
I point out that Jack the Ripper slew at will in the heart of the most populous city of old Earth and was never identified.
Doesn't seem likely, does it?
I suggest the possibility of a hypnotic screen which blinds all but the victim to the presence of the killer.
Is that possible?
Extremely possible. There are many such examples that exist in nature.
Well, this is fantasy. We all know the murderer is sitting right here with us. I mean, you're trying to cloud the issue. I've got a mind of...
I am satisfied the course of this investigation is valid enough. Please be seated, Mr. Hengist.
Reluctantly, Hengist returns to his seat.
All right, Mr. Spark, what do we have? Creature without form that feeds on horror and fear, that must assume a physical shape to kill.
And I suspect preys on women because women are more easily and more deeply terrified, generating more sheer horror than the male of the species.
Computer, criminological files. Cases of unsolved mass murders of women since Jack the Ripper.
Working, 1932, Shanghai, China, Earth, 7 women knifed to death. 1974, GM, USSR, Earth. 5 women knifed to death, 2105, Martian colonies. 8 women knifed to death, 2156, Heliopolis. Alpha Eridani 2, 10 women knifed to death. There are additional examples.
Captain, those places are aligned directly between Argelius and Earth.
Yes. When man moved out into the galaxy, that thing must have moved with him. Computer, identify the proper names Kessler and Baratus.
Working. Kessler, name given to unidentified mass murderer of women on planet Denim 2. Baratus, name given to unidentified mass murderer of women on planet Rigel 4. Additional data. Murders on Rigel 4 occurred 1 solar year ago.
Everyone turns and looks at Hengist.
You come from Rigel 4?
Well, many people do. It's not a crime.
No, but what we're investigating is. Would you mind taking the stand, Mr. Hengist?
Oh, I will not.
Mr. Hengist.
Prefect, this has gone far enough. I will not take the stand.
I can appreciate your position, sir. You are in charge of civil disturbances locally. If you are the entity for which we search, what better position from which to kill with impunity?
Just after you left Jarrus's house, we discovered the murder knife was missing.
And you were unaccounted for when Lieutenant Tracy was murdered.
An entity which feeds on fear and terror would find a perfect hunting ground on Argelius, a planet without violence, where the inhabitants are as peaceful as sheep. The entity would be as a hungry wolf in that fold.
Gentlemen, I know something of the law. You're engaging in sheer speculation.
Perhaps. Mr. Spock. The murder weapon.
Computer, report on analysis of Exhibit A.
Working. Exhibit A on visual.
The knife appears on a screen.
Composition of blade, boridium. Composition of handle, mironite. Details of carving on handle conform to folk art form, indicating place of origin.
Specify. Point of origin.
Artifact produced by hill people of Argus River region, planet Rigel 4.
Now then, Mr. Hengist.
Hengist bolts out of his chair. McCoy and Scotty try to stop him. He pushes past them. Kirk knocks him out with a punch. Spock kneels beside him as McCoy checks his pulse.
He's dead, Jim.
Oh, that's impossible.
The computer flashes.
Redjack! 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 Redjack!
The computer will not respond to these controls. The entity is unquestionably controlling it.
And the computer controls the ship.
They lift Hengist's body into a chair.
Hurry, Captain. Bypass circuits are blocked.
Audio cutoff, Spock.
Captain.
Brightly colored swirling images appear on the screen.
What's happening, Captain?
What does it mean?
It means that thing can control the entire operation of the ship, including the life support systems.
You mean it could kill us all?
Indeed, it will try, but not immediately. We know it feeds on fear and terror. There are nearly 440 humans aboard this ship. Surely it will try to breed fear and terror before it kills.
All hands, this is the captain. Stay at your posts. Remain calm. Captain out. Bones, what's the sedative situation?
Well, I've got some stuff that would tranquilize an active volcano.
Good. Start distribution immediately. The longer we can hold back that fear, the more time we'll have to get that thing out of the computer. Prefect, you'll all be safer here.
Spock, come with me. Spock, don't you have a compulsory scan unit built into the computer banks?
Yes, we do, Captain, but with the entity in control.
Well, aren't there certain mathematical problems which simply cannot be solved?
Indeed. If we could focus the attention of the computer on one of them.
That ought to do it.
They step into a lift.
Spot.
Apparently our friends learn very quickly.
Too quickly. Bridge.
The lift plummets.
Free fall. Out of control. Put it on manual. Bridge. What was due to be next? Life support malfunction.
We don't have much time, Captain.
Well, you said yourself, Spock. It wants terror, not just death.
They step out onto the bridge. Sulu is crouching beside an access panel.
Captain. The life support system override jammed.
All right. Man your station, Mr. Sulu.
Aye, sir.
Captain Kirk! Captain! You're wasting your time!
Cut that thing off.
You and all aboard your ship are about to die!
Try and cut that thing off.
This is the first time I heard a malfunction threaten us.
Man your post, Mr. Sulu. Prepare your manual overrides. You may need them. Aye, sir.
Kirk kneels beside Spock, who's crouched under a console as he rewires the switching of the ship's life support system.
Spock.
Normal environmental levels have been restored, Captain, but it will not last long. A few hours at best.
That should be enough time. Let's get at it.
What's going on, yet?
Never mind, Mr.
A nurse enters.
Tranquilizer?
Yes, sir.
Everyone, including yourself.
Yes, sir.
You cannot stop me now, Captain.
It'll do you no good. I control all circuits.
You cannot silence me.
You cannot reach me. Your manual overrides are extremely limited in life.
Spock. Proceeding, Captain, but I will need some time.
Yes, I know.
Soon all control will be restored to me.
There is nothing you can do to prevent it.
If you destroy the ship, you destroy yourself.
I am without ending. I have existed from the dawn of time, and I shall live beyond its end. I shall feed,
and this time I do not need a knife.
You will all die horribly,
in searing pain.
It is attempting to generate terror, Captain.
I may cut off your oxygen and suffocate you.
Captain?
Sulu is injected.
Whoever he is, he sure talks gloomy.
Man your post, Sulu. If any of the other systems go out, switch to manual override. And above all, don't be afraid.
With an armful of this stuff, I wouldn't be afraid of a supernova.
Kirk joins Spock, who's checking readings on his scanner.
Ready.
Implement.
Computer, this is a Class A compulsory directive. Compute to the last digit the value of pi.
No! No! No!
As we know, the value of pi is a transcendental figure without resolution. The computer banks will work on this problem to the exclusion of all else until we order it to stop.
Yes, I should keep that thing busy for a while. The Argelians will be the first to panic. Let's get back to the briefing room.
I wonder who it is we're not supposed to be afraid of.
Well, sir, I doubt very much whether the computers will be inhabited by more than a group of figures for a while.
There is resistance, Captain, but the directive is succeeding. Bank after bank is turning to the problem.
If you drive it out of the computers, you'll just have to go somewhere else.
How are you doing?
Well, I'm almost finished, just Jarrus and me.
Complete computer control, Captain. The entity has fled.
Yes, but where to? Bones, what would happen if that thing entered a tranquilized body?
Well, it might take up knitting, nothing more violent than
that. You say everyone's had a shot but you and Jarvis?
And you and Mr. Spock, Captain.
Well, I'm willing to take a chance on Mr. Spock. Better give yourself a shot, Doc.
No, I don't think so. I think I ought to stay clear.
Do as I say. Extend your arm, Mr. Jarvis.
No, kill you all, die, make you suffer!
Spock gives Jarrus a Vulcan nerve pinch. Hengist's body jumps up and grabs a female lieutenant.
Everybody keep back! I'll kill her, keep back!
You gotta be careful, you're gonna hurt somebody with that thing.
Kirk throws Hengist to the floor.
You'll suffer, you...
Spock injects him with the hypospray.
Oh, kill off.
Let's get him to the transporter room, quick.
Kirk carries him over his shoulder.
Die, 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 everybody, die.
Kirk and Spock carry him to the transporter room.
Kill, kill, kill you all.
Deep space. Full power. Widest angle of dispersion. Maintain. Get
excited, Captain? I'll do it.
You do it, Spock.
Spock pushes the spaced-out technician out of the way and sets the controls. Hengist dematerializes.
You didn't have to shove me, Mr. Spock. I'd have gotten round to it.
Spock and Kirk exchange a look. McCoy and Scotty come in.
Well, Jarrus is all right.
So what did you do with that thing, Captain? You send it back to the planet?
No, we beamed it out into open space, Scotty. Widest possible dispersion.
Well, the thing can't die.
Possibly, Doctor. Its consciousness may continue for some time, consisting of billions of separate bits of energy, floating forever in space, powerless.
But it will die finally. You seem very happy about the whole thing.
Well, why not? For a while then, I didn't know whether I was innocent or guilty.
Bones, how long will it take for this tranquilizer to wear off?
Oh, I don't know, 5 or 6 hours. I gave him a pretty big shot, Jim.
Yes, I can see that. Well, Mr. Spock, for the next 5 or 6 hours, we're going to have the happiest crew in space. Of course, we won't get much work done.
Captain, since you came to Argelia's to rest, I suggest you take advantage of the opportunity.
That's a splendid idea, Mr. Spock. I know a cafe where the women are so...
I know the place, Jim.
Let's go see.
You gentlemen, in your condition, don't be ridiculous. Mr. Spock, this cafe has women that are so...
Spock raises his eyebrows, waiting for Kirk's response.
No, I guess not.
Kirk looks round at McCoy and Scotty.
Hello?
At the door, he turns back.
Gentlemen.
They all head back to the bridge, leaving the grinning technician Kyle in charge of the transporter room. Kirk chuckles as he follows them out. This audio description was written and produced by IMS for the Sci-Fi Channel.